The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. He's always in my upper left. It's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
How's it going, Dave?
Not too bad. It's a little nutty, but it's one of those weeks. Mercury's in retrograde.
So can you give us an eyeful or an earful of what project's cooking right now in your brain, Dave?
I've got a couple kids' books I got to work on.
Ooh.
But those things have always been in the hopper. I've got 3 kid book projects I'm supposed to be working on. I was also supposed to be doing some test marketing on chocolate again.
Wow.
Another chocolatier.
Okay.
So, I wish they send me samples, though.
Yeah, I was just about to ask. They're not sending you samples?
No samples yet.
Oh, unbelievable.
If I was working on location, I'd be getting samples. But of course, if I was also working on location, I'd be in Denver too. But okay. I'm here instead.
Drew didn't get any free samples when he was working with Frito-Lay either. So, you know.
Those chili cheese Fritos, that pretty much covers all the bases for me, let me tell you.
I've never tried those.
You know, those, of course, are the dulcet tones of Professor Beth Oljar. Beth, we went for this Chem Club barbecue a few weeks ago. We went to GFS and we bought that big old box of the big mix of all the little bags of Frito-Lay products. And I laughed so hard because my mom, I guess, is the one that really loves them. And I grew up on them. And I honestly can't get enough of the chili cheese Fritos. But the students avoided them like they were kryptonite, this giant box of 80 bags altogether. And then at the very end of the event, that was the only thing.
What's so toxic about them?
Weird. Never touch. You would have thought at least some of the students would have been. I have to try them on chili. They're probably really good on chili. I eat Fritos on a lot of Mexican food and foods, but I should try the chili cheese ones.
So how were you said that Monday was trying like it was for the rest of us, Beth. What do you think was going on? What was in the water?
I don't know that I remember Monday being particularly trying. I just remember, you know, feel like it's been a really long week and the fall break is sort of long in coming. And because other than Labor Day, we haven't had. We haven't had a 3-day weekend or anything yet. So, and I have to be teaching 5 days a week this semester, which is probably going to be the last time I do that.
Whew.
Also the lack of sunshine.
I just wish it would get cold.
Yeah. Me too.
I much prefer cold weather.
Yeah. One of the things that I would say did not aid my mental health this week is, hey, let's cool off a little and keep the humidity at 100%. Like, it's just gross out there, you know? It's just gross.
I've gotten in the habit, basically, I take a shower as soon as I get home from school.
Yeah,
that's it. We're taping the show from a shower next week. No.
Don't forget.
As long as it's not mine, that's fine.
The man I know who also does not particularly care for humidity and is waiting with bated breath for that cool, crisp fall weather. It's Professor Dan Maggio.
I am waiting for the cooler weather and heading up north next weekend. And I don't think we're going to get as much cool weather as I hope, but it'll be cooler at the end of next week. So
you'll get the colors.
Are you heading to Grand Traverse?
Heading to the Grand Traverse area, yes, indeed.
Nice.
Yeah, the leaves will still be pretty.
Yeah.
I hear the colors are better up there than they are down here, but I haven't gotten an actual full report. So we'll hit the, I think we're going to head to Petoskey and Charlevoix and Harbor Springs area.
Nice. Folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook or Instagram or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Dear professors, welcome to part 7 of my continuing saga. I hope that you're enjoying yourselves because you're about to be hit in the face. Oh, no one likes to read that on a piece of paper.
That sounds pleasant.
With another set of 20 questions. Some may be easy, but certain others are going to be much more challenging. As with my last six recent sets, you'll be faced with queries from a smorgasbord of topics. Oh, yes. And number seven, ooh, can't wait, is my personal favorite. Professors, you are such brave souls to take me on, because each time I challenge you, you may never know what lies ahead. Best wishes, Natalie Bohe, Detroit Mercy alumna, 2011, from Sterling Heights, Michigan. Oh, okay. Let's see what we can do with these questions.
Fire away.
Apparently, Queen Victoria had a primary fear in her lifetime. Looking back, it was easily diagnosed as episcopophobia. What was it that Queen Victoria was afraid of?
Fear of bishops?
I was going to say Episcopalians. Yes. But...
no, I know she had some weird, obscure fear that was just like really unfounded.
Staircase.
Did she have a, was it a...
fear of staircases.
No, that's not what it was.
Open carriages.
No.
She wasn't a germaphobe, or was it something like, I can't remember what it was. I remember reading about it. She had some, and it never happened to her, but she just worked up in her mind. I'm trying to remember what it was.
So who's good at Latin? What are the roots of Episca?
Jim Tubbs is really good at Latin. Can we text a friend?
What I was going to say is that Dave wasn't, he was a lot closer than not with, we know that bishops wear their mitre on their heads. And this actually is a fear of something that could have been found at the time of Queen Victoria on people's heads.
Hats?
Feathered hats?
Or- no.
You know, lice?
She had a fear of wigs. She had a fear of wigs for whatever reason. Yeah.
Okay.
Mostly when she was younger. And I'm like, I'm remembering Victorian times. I'm pretty sure wigs were still kicking.
The powdered wig thing, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Pretty sure you can still see them in the House of Lords and courts.
Very
that
true.
That would do it.
Very true.
So it's not like they've gone away, although they're certainly not as common. As they were.
Professors, I mean, this is one that I believe that I would be able to hack away at, but I'm sending it your way. There are four chemical elements that make up the formula for the beautiful mineral that's usually called beryl, B-E-R-Y-L. Do you think you could get two of the four elements that make up beryl?
I think I can get Kendra.
Beryllium?
Beryllium is one of them.
Oh, way to go, Dan.
And I'm sorry, Beth, what was that?
Bauxite. I don't know. Nope. Just sort of be.
Chrome?
I'll tell you what,
chromium?
Though, if you remember what bauxite is made out of, you'll be able to grab one of the other two for sure. Not chromium.
Okay. Is it bauxite like an... bauxite.
The main element in bauxite is aluminum. And that's definitely one of the other ones in Daryl.
I got it. Yay. Yep.
So we hit aluminum, and the other two would be oxygen, which seems to just oxidize pretty much everything in the Earth's crust, and not too surprisingly, silicon, because everything is based off of a glassy sand these days. Natalie reminds us there are many different types of beryl. Three of them that we would know probably off the top of our head would be morganite, aquamarine, and of course, emerald. They are bright green. Mm-hmm. Okay. This type of pasta takes its name from the Italian word meaning twins. What's that?
Gemelli?
Gemelli,
yeah. Thank you.
That's right. Ooh. Yep.
Little twins. Absolutely.
Twist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go, Dan.
Side note here I love, it's important to know that it's not two separate pieces of pasta that are twinned together and twisted in gemelli, but a single S-shaped strand that's super twisted.
Leave it up to the Asians to come up with it, and leave it up to the Italians to diversify it, you know?
That's
so.
Right, exactly.
Probably why I like it, because it's super twisted.
Just like you.
Indeed.
In the 1992 film The Bodyguard, we've all been there at some level, right? It may have been panned by critics, but its soundtrack is well known even to this day, particularly with songs by Whitney Houston, who of course starred in the film. One of the tracks was a collaboration between Aaron Neville and Kenny G. Do you remember the name of that song?
Try Not To.
No, I only know one song.
I can hear it in my head. I can't think of it. I've brain cramped.
Yep, it's okay. It says, even if my heart would break, there's just a shred of memory of that title being important. But there's only certain things that I think of when I think of Aaron Neville and Kenny G. What can I say? So, okay, there are 550 species of what are called swallowtail butterflies.
Okay.
The eastern swallowtail feeds on this plant as its main sort of meal. And it's a very, very common, to put it lightly, weed, even around where we live, with beautiful,
milkweed, right?
Large white flowers. It's not milkweed.
Dandelion? Clover?
Oh, what's the big puffy white poofball things?
Those are dandelions.
No, right? No, the big... My neighbor's... So, my
allium?
Neighbor across the street...
Where's Heather when we need her?
Where's my wife when I need her? Oh, doggone it.
I'll tell you what, it has a regal name. And when I say big flowers, I mean very large.
Queen Anne's lace?
Yes, Queen Anne's lace. That's actually what the swallowtails eat. Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
In the same family, thank you, Natalie. What do we got here? Parsley, carrots. Ooh. Fennel and dill are all part of the Queen Anne's lace family.
That's why they're in my yard. So
that's why the bunnies like to hang out in Dave's open lot.
Can I just rent like a feral kitty for a couple days?
If you can afford it, you're going to get one. Yeah, sure.
I should.
Well, mine would do, but if you could trap a feral one, maybe you could set it on your lawn or something.
Too many rabbits. Just far too many.
In the early 2000s, this composer-singer, very, very famous in Ireland, donated money to help a toddler boy get a much-needed heart operation. Who was that?
Enya?
It was Enya. Yes, it was Enya.
How'd I know that?
Oh. Well, I did say Irish.
Well, I mean, it could have been Sinead O'Connor, yeah, you know, Bono. Sinead. I mean.
That's what I thought. Did we have that question? Sounded familiar.
You know, I'm getting a real strong vibe right now. I'm starting to wonder about something. That question does sound very, very familiar.
You're not going to say we have to start again, are you?
Don't even. Okay, so how could we quickly determine?
You're going to have to raise the bar, I think, on the passing.
Not like we remembered what was in barrel. So, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. There were 5 weeks from now. Yeah. But others, maybe we haven't. There's another issue here, too. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. And I think it's great that Natalie sends us these questions. The most recent set that she sent just a few weeks ago was in the late teens in terms of her counting the sets. So this is part 7, and I believe I have something up to like 17. So she sends us a proliferation of questions, which is wonderful. Yeah. And there may be some overlap. So let's see what happens. So I'll trust in our editor, Michael, and if the episode only ends up being the introductions and then 30 seconds of everybody saying hi, oh well, that's just the way it's going to happen.
And 20 minutes of music.
Sing along with Beth. Oh
my gosh, that's awesome.
The German sing along.
Sing Partridge Family songs.
It's going to be like the Dakota Rathskeller, right?
Yeah.
Right.
They have their sing along on the wall.
Oh. That's right.
As long as I get a big stack of those potato pancakes, all is well.
Oh my
big
God.
Big time.
Can you imagine if we had a remote there? Oh, we'd never leave. Oh.
Why haven't we had a remote there yet? That's my question.
That's an excellent idea.
So Filipino desserts, traditional Filipino desserts, use an ube halaya as a main ingredient and mostly is used in pastries and ice cream. What is a ube halaya? I can tell you that it's a plant.
Is it a fruit?
No.
Was it like durian?
It's not durian.
Is it like vanilla or some sort of like flavoring?
A cream base?
It does have a flavor, but it's a little more substantial than just a vanilla bean, Beth.
Okay. Pineapple, like a puree or something like that?
No. I mean, I'm sure they puree it. I can tell you that when you see it, because it rears its head every once in a while on like cooking shows as an odd ingredient, that it is a very, very bright purple color. And I think it's kind of shocking to people who expect things to be a certain color, you know?
Dragon fruit?
No.
Passion fruit?
No, ube helaya is a bright purple yam, mostly. Yeah. It's
like a taro almost. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's a root. It's a root. Okay. We had a big discussion at the Mayo family dinner table a few weeks ago about root vegetables and, you know, a tuber versus a carrot and things like that, you know.
My dad thought things like rutabagas and parsnips were trick vegetables. That's what he called them.
Trick vegetables.
I'm not entirely sure why, but...
Because maybe you thought you were going in for a salad, but you ended up eating a root or something like that?
Yeah, and they weren't green and, you know.
Exactly.
You're listening to Ask the Professor from University of Detroit Mercy. To send questions to Ask the Professor, email them to atp@udmercy.edu. The professors will return to answer more questions in just 65 seconds. But first... It's an Ask the Professor flashback, 1995.
Our next little bit of questions comes from Dirt Man.
Oh, dead Dirt Man.
From Kindy, Michigan. Oh. Yes.
Kindy. Is this someone new?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Well, but Dirt Man's been around for a while.
Aren't we going to Kindy? One of our road trips?
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
There's good bowling.
Is that where it is?
I didn't know that. It's a great place.
Where's Kindy?
Here, Dan, it's in the thumb.
Of Indiana?
All of us carry the map of the state around with us on our bodies.
Right. Massachusetts is supposed to be doable, too. You just put your hand into these weird contortions.
Oh, is that?
This is Massachusetts.
George is making a threatening, perhaps obscene gesture.
Well, Dirt Man wants to know...
How do you say Cape Cod in Italian?
And we've got questions from Natalie Bohe from Sterling Heights, Michigan. Oh, okay. When and where was the first KOA campground established? Year and place.
Which coast should we guess? Or no coast, east or west? Probably east coast. Everything's So New York.
Pennsylvania.
I'm going to push you in a very, very decidedly central direction.
So Kansas?
Iowa.
One of the Dakotas.
I have to give it to Beth with the error bars. It was actually Billings, Montana. It was Montana.
Oh.
But what year? What year?
47.
No, it's earlier. 31.
Actually, it was later.
Later.
Oh. Okay. 1953.
Well, cars would have had it been popular, right?
Yeah.
So it has to be more like late 50s, early 60s. It was 1962. I appreciate the fact that you all try to reason your way, you know, through these. But,
well, we should just guess.
We should really just
guess. So I wonder, like the people that first went to the campground, did they took their cars and they had tents? There weren't campers maybe back then. In the 60s.
Okay. So Dan, what was your logic? You know, obviously your brain went to Wisconsin just like mine did. I'm thinking like Wisconsin to me is kind of like the gateway to the West in a way. Yeah. That's where my mind was going. It's like, I didn't realize we had to go all the way to Montana in order to set up a tent. That's awesome.
I have family in Montana.
I love Montana.
With its one congressional representative, because nobody lives there.
That's not a bad way to live either.
No.
Professors, for approximately every 60 minutes on average, Yellowstone's legendary geyser Old Faithful expels water. But do you know, for every expulsion, I suppose, how many gallons of water are ejected?
1,400 gallons?
More than 1,400.
40,000 gallons.
It is not in the tens of thousands.
Oh, 9,999.
I'm telling you, we need Kendra back here again.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
On a good day, right, Dan? On a good day.
500.
Nope, it's more. It's the problem is it varies, but if you had given me anything
on average,
you definitely did not, between 4,000 and 8,000, that would be in the wheelhouse.
Oh. It's like 5,500.
Did you? I'm very, very sorry. I thought you said 500 is all that I heard. I'm like, that's a little low. So, yeah, you got it, Beth. You got it right on in the middle. I just think that it's kind of funny. There's such an odd regularity to it. And I've never seen Old Faithful. Have you all?
No.
None of us.
Now, question. Now, how do they – I have a question. How do they measure? You know what I mean? It's like, it's a big spray. So how do you?
That's a good question.
I can't imagine what that many gallons of water looks like when it's, you know, propelled into the air.
Up out of the, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a really good piece of trivia. I hope it's not too esoteric for you. This Native American medicine man and second cousin to Crazy Horse converted to Catholicism and eventually became an evangelist for Catholicism. Who is he? FYI, to date, he is actually undergoing the first stages of the canonization process to become a saint.
Not like Crazy Horse or anything like that, is it?
No, is second it cousin to Crazy Horse.
Second. Okay, second cousin. Okay. Ooh,
we need time for this.
The best I can do when I'm looking in more of a Beth direction and secondarily Dan. And sorry, Dave.
No, can't be.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting close. We have heard this person invoked by John Stoudemire and his connection to the Lakota before.
Sitting Bull?
Nope.
Second cousin to Crazy Horse.
Yes.
Not that we know the family tree or anything like that. Right. Dear Lord.
Although I got to tell you, that's one of my new favorite Reddits to go and check out. This guy that makes these extremely in-depth family trees for celebrities and royalty. Very cool. Check it out online, folks.
Ooh.
You know what? The medicine man's name is Nicholas Black Elk is what his name is.
Well, I'm sure that,
He's done some writing. He's done some writing and stuff like that. So just
so
really
when did he live?
This is relatively recently. I would say in the last 100 years easily. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We hear all the time. I shouldn't, you know, grumble too much. I just think it's kind of funny. There are a number of Native Americans who converted to Catholicism. And actually, a number of them are in the process of becoming saints or have become saints. Saint Kateri Tekawitha is one that's invoked a lot at my kids' grade school because they want to show just a little more inclusivity. And we could talk about the nature of that inclusivity.
Not that it's going to happen in our lifetime, but can you imagine a Native American pope?
I cannot. I
know.
I can barely imagine a Jesuit pope.
I know. Pope Francis.
The Jesuits were out on the plains just like they were everywhere else, you know, so it's not surprising that they, you know, obviously they've made converts among the plains Indian tribes.
Right. Exactly. Last one here, profs. And I think it's one that's a standard piece of trivia in the Western world. It's kind of fun. What's wrong with this statement? Baby carrots are carrots plucked from the ground during their early stages of growth.
There's just no such thing as baby carrots. They're just kind of like large carrots knocked down in little pieces. Yeah.
I believe that we've already hit the nail on the head with Beth's original comment.
Oh.
Beth went right for the logic class answer.
What was that?
They're not done.
Yeah. Oh, so it had to do with
that. Large size carrots that are whittled down into bite sized pieces are baby carrots. They're just nicknamed baby carrots, right? So, yeah, funny stuff. Profs, you know what it's time for. Frank Burrows and family have sent us an extremely long list of imponderables for us to ponder, and we need to take a quick look
ponder
at
them?
What we've got here. Let's
I need to think about the logic of that, actually, right? Ponder an imponderable.
This is a good one. Super specific. It's good for a smaller group. If we had seven or eight panelists, this could get out of hand fast. What's your favorite? I just have a story. I don't know if I have a good answer for this one. Song that was covered better than the original.
Ooh.
And I got to tell this one. I had this teacher when I was in high school, kind of a crusty older guy, but heart of gold, that sort of thing. And he just swore by. And I want to put this out there in the middle of the fervor for the original Beaches movie. Remember Bette Midler and all that?
Mm-hmm.
He swore by Wind Beneath My Wings by Gladys Knight and the Pips. He's like, that is the only version. I know it's a cover. I don't want to hear this Bette Midler nonsense anymore. I want Gladys Knight. And I had to respect that. I'm like, oh, I like the fact that you actually thought that that was better. So that's my cover story. But for you all, something that was covered better than the original.
Okay, I got a few that come to mind. The first one that comes to mind right now is Papo's a Rolling Stone done by Was Not Was.
Ah.
Which has got a little bit more of a snap to it than the original. Nothing against the original, but this one just had a little bit more funk, a little zip to it. And the other one I was thinking, was it I Heard It Through the Grapevine? Marvin Gaye.
Oh, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
His version.
Reversed.
Yes.
Very cool.
I think Manfred Mann's cover of Blinded by the Light might be better than Bruce's original, and I'm a Bruce fan. So that's saying a lot. Earth, Wind, and Fire does a remarkable cover of Got to Get You Into My Life.
That's a good one.
So true.
I love that Sgt. Pepper's movie precisely because I think some of the musical performances are actually really good. And that's what I mean. Aerosmith covers come together in that movie, and they do a great job. So,
oh, okay, good call on the movies, though, Beth.
Yeah, that's a good.
Oh, okay, I got one other one. U2 covering Sinatra's Night and Day.
Oh my gosh.
Really? From the Red Hot and Blue soundtrack. I vaguely remember that one. I thought that one was kind of interesting, but
I don't know music very well. I've never heard either one of those, but I find it hard to believe that anybody could outdo Frank.
Bob Seger does a good cover of Fortunate Son, the CCR song.
Oh, yeah.
True. Yeah. Okay, what else?
And I'm giving Dave bonus points for making me think of Red Hot and Blue for possibly the first time in 20, 25 years. So
that was, who was it? That was,
those are all the covers of Cole Porter's songs.
Cole Porter, right? Yeah, that's right. Cole Porter.
Anniversary.
I mean, you can't beat him. So
yeah, that's right. Dan, there's got to be something.
Come on, Dan.
I don't listen to music enough to really have an opinion here, honestly. I mean, what's the definition of when a cover song? I mean, anybody else doing some? So there's the original version, and then anything that follows is
it's a cover.
It could be any level of musician doing a song that's already been done.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Interestingly enough, the assumption tends to be that it's the music is fairly recent, right? So if somebody's doing, you know, re-records a song by Beethoven, right? Or even
that's not considered a cover.
Sings a song that, you know, Body and Soul, right? That old torch song from like the 40s. So if somebody records that now, it wouldn't be called a cover, right? Because the original was written so long ago. There just seems to be this sort of weird assumption that when you're talking about a cover, it's of a song that's come out, you know, like within the last 20 or 30 years, right? Instead of going farther back.
So another one would be, it just came to me, Tina and Ike Turner doing Proud Mary, right? Versus CCR. Just very prolific both ways.
All right. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the stuff on Glee. My God.
Oh, God. There you go. There you go. Absolutely.
First three seasons, I'll give you that.
Because Naya Rivera,
or two seasons,
who unfortunately died
that's
recently,
right.
That's right. She and Mercedes did a cover of River Deep, Mountain High. Right. Oh. You're mentioning Tina Turner made me think about that because she and Ike did that, and the duet that the two of them do on that song is amazing.
Sure. Well, props, I think we covered a lot of ground here. It's pretty awesome stuff. We've reached the end of our show, so the time has come to say goodbye. Dan.
Goodbye.
Beth.
Goodbye.
And Dave.
See ya.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.